Hello and welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. It's inauguration day today. We have a listener of the week. I don't know, which is more important? For nonprofit radio, the listener of the week is more important. Karen Graham, she emailed me, "Your whole hair thing is cracking me up. Thank you for bringing that joy into my day." Well, Karen, thank you for taking such an interest in my exceedingly long hair, longest it's ever been in my life. I'm glad it brings you joy, and I would ask you to speak to my mother about this, please, because she's routinely reminding me that her salon also cuts men's hair, and she's threatening scissors while I'm sleeping, so I'll give you her contact info. Now, Karen is executive director of Ideal Wear, which I admire very much, idealwear.org. I did a video praising them a few weeks ago, which you'll find at tonymartinetti.com. I don't think you'll find the video at idealwear.org, which I'm a little disappointed about, frankly. I thought at least a link. You could have shared the link, I thought. You know, but Idealwear is a very good organization. Karen Graham, executive director, congratulations on being our listener of the week. I'm glad you're with me. I'd be stricken with ketoaciduria if you rained down on me with the idea that you missed today's show. 2016 Giving Report and the 2017 Forecast. No need to wait until June. Atlas of Giving CEO Rob Mitchell releases the Atlas's analysis of last year's giving and their initial forecast for 2017. Also have insightful commentary from Professor Paul Shervish from Boston College and Doug White. On Tony's Take Two, videos from the Nonprofit Technology Conference. We're sponsored by Pursuant, full-service fundraising, data-driven and technology-enabled. You'll raise more money. Pursuant.com. And by WeBe Spelling, super cool spelling bee fundraisers. WeBeeSpelling.com. I'm very glad to welcome Rob Mitchell back. He's been on the show 3-4 times or so. He's the CEO of Atlas of Giving. You'll find that at atlasofgiving.com. He's at Philanthroman, or as I like to say, at Philanth Roman, which he probably gets tired of hearing me say, but it's my show. I do whatever the hell I want. He's at Philanth Roman. That's the end of it. Welcome back, Rob Mitchell.
Thanks, Tony. It's always great to be with you.
It's a pleasure to have you. Thanks for coming up from Texas. Thank you very much. So you're here to release the review of 2016 and the forecast for 2017. Remind us, please, what is going on at Atlas of Giving? What is this all about?
Atlas of Giving, at the Atlas of Giving, what we do is we measure and forecast charitable giving by sector, by source, and by state, including Washington, D.C. And we release our information monthly. So our forecast is updated each month. Our calculation of giving is updated by sector, source, and state each month. And our methodology is based on 65 algorithms. What we did was we had a team of 25 PhD level statisticians and analysts review factors that we thought affected giving, and to that they added 50% more, and they actually determined what economic, demographic, and event factors are involved in charitable giving and what their relative weights were for each category. For instance, the algorithm for corporate giving is very, very different from the algorithm for church giving, let's say. So there are some commonalities, but there are also, and when I say correlation, this is based on what's called correlation science. A correlation, even a strong one, does not necessarily indicate that there is a relationship. And one example I'll give you is that in our corporate giving algorithm, one of the key factors is auto part sales. Now, we don't for a minute believe that auto part sales have anything to do with charitable giving, but there is a strong relationship.
That variable correlates with that form of giving.
Exactly.
For reasons that we could speculate, but in numerical regression analysis, those factors are correlated. those two variables
exactly
are correlated.
Right. And just so you know, this is the same kind of technology that the Fed uses, hedge funds use.
All right, and I trust you. You're bona fide.
And okay. And interestingly enough, the auto part sales is also part of one of the Fed's algorithms, we found out.
Okay.
So, and one of the things we found recently, because we're continually trying to improve our algorithms and learn from them, is that large equipment manufacturing index has a strong correlation with national giving.
Okay. All right. We're not going to go too much into the mechanics of the details
sure.
of it. Okay. But that's interesting. So large equipment manufacturing and what was the other one you just I'm sorry. What was
auto parts
an auto parts sales related to fundraising. Who knew? Right? We do. We do now. Okay. You have a headline for us. Let's first talk about what 2016 looked like for fundraising. What happened?
Well, in 2016, we had a record year for dollars given, and the dollars given was just shy of $500 billion. It was $497.4 billion given nationally to all causes.
Mm-hmm. How does that relate to 2015?
That is a 4.1% increase.
Okay.
Over 2015.
And what was 2014 to 2015? Do you remember that? What was that increase?
It was a double-digit increase.
Oh, it was?
It was.
Okay. There was a tail end of the recession, I guess.
Well, a lot of that had to do with what was happening in the stock market, and we'll talk more about that
okay.
as we go along.
Okay. More of that. All right. So 4.1% increase from 15 to 16. We're just under half a trillion dollars in giving.
One other important point to make is that for most people who are affiliated with nonprofits or the nonprofit industry, they have assumed, based on other information, that charitable giving has been pegged at 2% of real GDP for as long as we can remember.
Yes, you have an announcement for this. Go ahead.
We have charitable giving at almost 3% of real GDP, so 2.97% of real GDP.
And that is huge, because the country has been talking about the stalled percentage, 2% of GDP, for a long time. Certainly the 6 years that I've been doing this, and probably longer than that. So now you're putting at just under 3% of GDP, which is enormous, 50% increase you're seeing.
Yes.
All right. All right.
And there's a reason why.
Okay. We're going to hold that reason.
Okay.
Till after this break. You're going to hold that. And we'll go away for a moment. But of course, we'll be back. We're talking about the 2016 review, the 2017 forecast. We've got two professors joining us, Paul Shervish and Doug White. Stay with us.
You're attuned to Nonprofit Radio. Tony Martinetti also hosts a podcast for the Chronicle of Philanthropy. Fundraising Fundamentals is a quick, 10-minute burst of fundraising insights published once a month. Tony's guests are expert in crowdfunding, mobile giving, event fundraising, direct mail, and donor cultivation. Really, all the fundraising issues that make you wonder, am I doing this right? Is there a better way? There is. Find the Fundraising Fundamentals archive at TonyMartinetti.com. That's MARTIGNETTI. Remember, there's a G before the N. Thousands of listeners have subscribed on iTunes. You can also learn more at the Chronicle website, philanthropy.com. Fundraising Fundamentals, the better way.
Welcome back to Big Nonprofit Ideas for the Other 95%. I just want to tease. I want to do a little live listener love. Just a touch of the live listeners. College Station, Texas, Raleigh, North Carolina, and multiple right here in New York, New York. Of course, we've got our listeners abroad. We'll get to those, but just a little taste of live listener love for now. All right. Almost 3%. Let's call it 3%. 2.97. What's 3/100ths between friends and colleagues? Let's call it 3% of GDP. Why do you believe we've had this 50% increase?
Well, there are a number of reasons.
Okay.
They've been growing. One is the number of nonprofits continues to grow. And so now we have.
But that's always been the case. And we always assumed it seemed to be a zero-sum game. More nonprofits entered, I don't know, 50,000 a year. So maybe one of the professors has a better number than that. But many, many new every year. And it's still always stuck at 2%.
Well, yes, but now we have technology. And so there's so many more different ways for people to give. There's so many more ways for people who are raising the money to get good information and good targeting about how they're going to solicit money. So fundraising has become much more efficient.
If it's related to technology, it's probably more adopting technology that we've had for a while. Except for maybe you're thinking like text to give. Is that the
text
emerging
to
technology
give could be
you're thinking
one,
of?
One that I love is crowdfunding kind of technology,
okay,
where you're using social media to raise money for a cause.
Right.
And so that didn't exist. The other thing that...
It didn't just come into existence in 2016.
No.
We've had crowdfunding...
No.
Several years.
No. And, but we didn't just jump from 2% to 3% in 1 year either.
It's been creeping up. Oh, so what was the percentage last year?
The percentage
of GDP.
The percentage last year was, I don't remember.
Okay. But it was something less than 2.97.
It was.
Okay. All right. So we're at 3% now. So that's a big deal.
It is a big deal.
This has been stagnant for a long time. Okay. Let's talk about some of the different sectors that have benefited from this increase. Since last year, this 4.1% increase. I'm always curious about religion, because religion is, you and I have talked over the past couple of years, has always been a shrinking proportion. It's been the largest of all the sectors, but it's been a shrinking proportion.
Yes, 10 years ago, gifts to churches and congregations accounted for 50% of all giving in the U.S.
Oh, now it's, what, 30, what do you have, 31?
32%.
32. Did it lose a percent from last year?
We're projecting that it's going to lose a percent from this year to next year.
Okay. So it stayed steady, because last year it had lost a percentage.
Yes, it had.
From 15 to 16, it lost a percent. And I'm pretty sure from 14 to 15, it lost a percent. Because I remember talking about that with you.
Yes.
All right, so now it's steady, but you're projecting a loss for next year.
Yes.
Okay. But it used to be 50.
It used to be 50.
Now 32. Okay.
And the reason why is that the United States is becoming more like Western Europe. It's becoming more secularized. Fewer and fewer people are joining congregations, supporting congregations. But what's interesting is that you mentioned zero-sum game. Giving is still growing. So the gifts are going other places. They're just not going to religion.
Yeah, clearly. Right.
And you know, the fastest growing sector over the last 3 years has been the environmental sector, and it is the smallest sector. It only accounts for 2% of all giving, but at the rate it's growing, it's astounding. And then human needs organizations have also done quite well, and the education sector has grown. Those are the three fastest growing sectors, and have been for the last three, well, really since the end of the recession. Education is explained by the way that they raise money, because one of the things we found at the Atlas of Giving is that it's not so much about the quote economy, it's factors in the economy, it's factors mm-hmm. of demographics.
Well, that goes back to your algorithms.
I mean, yes.
Your algorithms have found the variables, i.e. factors that correlate with giving.
So our two professors are well acquainted with the fact that most universities go from campaign to campaign, and lots of campaign contributions come out of gains in the stock market or gains in real estate.
Right.
And so when the stock market does well, education does well.
How about the environment? What's happening there?
I think the biggest factor in the environment is awareness. You cannot turn on any of your... I once heard a guy say a few years ago that the time has come when you can pick your version of the truth through the news.
Yes.
And so, but truthfully, no matter what your source of news is, you can't escape the fact that we're always talking about the environment now.
Climate change.
We're talking about climate change. We're talking about the instruments to defer climate change, things like solar panel and wind power, and other alternative energy sources. I mean, Elon Musk is making billions of dollars capturing energy in batteries and using that.
Do you see in your 2017 forecast an increase in market share for the environment from larger than 2%?
No.
You don't see it? No. You see it continuing to grow.
It is not, growing, and it's right. growing faster than any
forecast
other sector.
It to grow, but not more than its current share, 2%. Not more. Okay.
That's correct.
Okay.
We could be wrong, though, because remember, this forecast that we'll talk about today, it's just the first of 11 forecasts we'll do throughout the year.
Right.
So we update our forecast every month. And the example that I love to give is 2001. 2001 was bumping along to be a great giving year, or a relatively good giving year. And then September 11th happened. And if you were a non-disaster charity, what we know today, having backfilled information now for 50 years, is that giving dried up if you were a non-disaster charity pretty much for 6 months and then came roaring back.
Let's stop talking around the forecast and let's talk about the forecast for 2017. What do you see happening?
We're looking for growth of 4.4% nationally.
4.4 versus 4.1 for this year.
So a little bit better.
Okay, more growth, yes. And what dollar amount does that come to?
The dollar amount...
Over half a trillion, right?
It's going to be over half a trillion, yes, it will be.
Okay. Looks like 519 billion. Okay. Now, again,
right.
with the caveat, I understand this is your first forecast of 11 more to come for 2017. Each month you update the annual forecast. Is that right?
That we do.
Right.
It's a rolling 12-month forecast. So our forecast contains a forecast for next month, for the next 3 months, for the next 6 months, for the next 12 months, and then we also update the calendar year forecast every month.
Okay. What do you? What else do you foresee for 2017? Let's talk about the sources, because you mentioned some of the sectors that you see sector growth in 2017. How about from sources? Foundations, corporate, bequest, individuals, et cetera. What do you have there for 2017?
Well, the biggest change I see is in corporate giving. And corporate giving, as many people know, is not a large percentage of source giving in the United States.
Yeah, it's only 5%. We're going to talk about that. When we bring the professors in, I'd like to chat a little bit about why that is, to me, that's small. Maybe I'm wrong. But all right.
But so corporate giving this year, or this year just past 2016, was double digit growth, 10.3%. What we're projecting for next year for corporate giving is only 1.8%.
All right. Still
growth.
I'm looking at that. I understand that's growth. I'm talking about the share, the proportional share of total giving for corporations is only 5%. All right. I'll tell you what. Let's bring in our professors, because we've talked about the headlines. Let's bring in Doug White. He's a former professor and director of Columbia University's Master of Science in Fundraising Management. His most recent book is Abusing Donor Intent, which we discussed here. I was going to tease him about that having been 3 years ago and what's happened since, but now I find out that he's writing another book for later this year. Doug White, welcome back.
Well, thank you for having me back. It's good to see you again, with your long hair.
Can't avoid it, huh?
We'll just call him Samson.
You and Karen Graham.
Samson. I thought it was Einstein.
I prefer Fabio. If you're gonna make any references, let's make it Fabio. Okay. Paul Shervish, he's on the line with us from North Carolina. He's professor emeritus at Boston College, where he led the Center on Wealth and Philanthropy. He helped to found the Wealth and Giving Forum, a peer-centered endeavor to deepen the philanthropic engagement of the nation's 7,000 wealthiest families. Paul Shervish, welcome back.
Hello. Nice to be back. And hello, Doug.
Hello, pleasure, Paul.
Pleasure to have you both with us. Let's give deference to the guy on the phone, because he's a slight disadvantage. Paul Shervish, what sticks out? Let's start with the 2016 review before we get to the 2017 forecast. What sticks out for you in the review of 2016 giving?
the growth that occurred in 2016. I think that the story in all of these numbers is that the amount of giving is growing $20 billion a year over the last few years, and at 4%, it's going to grow faster than that because of the compounding. This is a remarkable trend line that 2016 confirms, and the projections for 2017 indicate the continuation of that.
So you love
the amount going to charity is incredible and growing.
You love this that we're at now 3% of GDP.
Yes, and when we did our wealth transfer model, we found that if the goose is growth in wealth and GDP, the egg is growth in philanthropy. And so if the economy grows, we're going to find a dramatic, even greater dramatic growth in philanthropy.
Doug White, let's bring you in. What strikes you about 2016?
Well, what Paul just said is a continuation of his studies back in the 90s and the early 2000s with regard to what's going to happen. And I think we're seeing it take place right now. 2016, for me, was defined by the mega gift. There were so many of them. And what I don't have at my fingertips is the analysis of how the smaller gifts have grown, the number of smaller gifts have grown. But we do know that the mega gifts have been more than they've ever been before. That has to be a factor in your numbers, right, Rob?
It is. And in fact, 2015, there were more mega gifts than there were in 2016, actually. So it is a factor. You talk about a Zuckerberg gift or another gift from the Gates Foundation or those kinds of things. Mega gifts are a huge factor, but another factor is what we're finding, and I'd be interested in the opinion of our two experts, is what we're finding is that millennials are a giving group of individuals, and they're not looking for cost per dollar raised as their measurement. They're looking for effectiveness and accountability on who they give to, but they are an active force in philanthropy. The big gains that we've had in online giving and technology giving come largely from that group of people.
Doug, millennials?
I totally agree with that, and I think that's one of the bigger challenges for the established charities around the United States who have become used to just the annual giving continuing, which is fine. But I think the millennials are saying, they're asking different questions. They're not saying, am I loyal to this cause? They're asking, even if I am loyal to this cause, how effective is my gift? And I think the question of impact, we use that word a lot, and it is a topic of my new book. The question of impact is so important. It should be, but now it's important to the millennials because, as Rob is saying, they give individually, they give to causes that they can see an impact in or from.
Paul, what's your sense of what's creating this terrific growth?
It's the dramatic growth of wealth at the very top. What Doug said is absolutely correct. The mega gifts capture one dimension. What captures a larger swath of this is the $1 million gift. And these are increasing, and the list is getting longer. And I think this also helps explain the decline in religious giving. Religious giving is to churches. And the upper end does not give proportionately to their churches in the same ratio that the bottom 95% of the population does. So part of this change in religious giving is that so much more is going to education, to new kinds of ventures, to international, to environment, to social needs. And at the very top, the percentage that they give to their churches is minuscule compared to how much they give to other causes. And so that is part of not just the secularization, which I agree with, but part of this is where the mega gifts are going.
Well, Paul, how come we're not cracking this 73-74% proportion that individuals account for in the total pie of giving? How come it sticks there? If we're seeing all these,
are you asking?
Yeah, you. Yes, Paul. If we're seeing all these mega gifts and the $1 million gifts, how come we're not getting past the mid 70 figure?
Well, one of the things is we just found out that foundation growth is dramatic. Now, most of foundation growth and bequests are individual gifts, and so when we're looking at individuals, you have to understand what is going on inside of individuals, and that's private foundations too. It's also bequests, and it's also remittances. Now, Doug, I would say that a report by your very astute research on remittances would be important. See, what we're finding out in some places that a lot of immigrants are not contributing, quote unquote, to philanthropy. But the number is between 150 and 200 billion a year that is sent back overseas, largely to people in need by immigrants, recent immigrants.
All right, let's turn to Doug. Remittances?
Well, that's a good point. That a lot of money does go back, and that's, of course, not counted in this whole process here. In terms of generosity, the way we define charity, the way we define making the world a better place, that's a huge part of that. And it's unfortunate that we can't capture that, but we're not talking about that in technical terms right now, but we really ought to, because it's an expression of our society's beneficence, and I really think that's an important thing. But there's one other question that I just wanted to point out, or at least clarify from my own perspective, is that this really is a zero-sum game. There's only 100 percentage points that we have to work with. And so to actually ask or worry about that we're only at 75%, those are living individuals. You know, the other 5%, we have dead individuals. They're still individuals.
Bequests.
Dead,
yeah.
Bequests. So that's really kind of 80%. I can't, we could only go to 100%, but that's only if nobody else gave anything, the foundations or the corporations. So I suspect it's going to stay that way. In fact, it's been there 75 and 5 for the last, as long as I can remember.
Yeah. Well, and Paul's point, of course, that a lot of the foundation giving
is individuals,
yeah. Directed by individuals, but it comes from the private foundation.
Yeah, it's just a medium. So as an expression of individual philanthropy, I think Paul is correct. I would throw in the individual philanthropy into the foundation world.
And donor advised funds.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to continue this conversation. I got to do a little business. I have to talk about a couple of our sponsors. And we're going to get to donor advised funds after this. Pursuant.com. Between Brexit, the Syrian refugee crisis, and the inauguration of a new president today, the national and global climates have a lot of implications for what you can expect in your fundraising, and we're going to talk about some of those events later today. The next Pursuant webinar is Field Guide to 2017 Fundraising. It'll give you strategies that you need to keep up with everything that's going on in the world. It's a free webinar. They always are. You register at Pursuant.com, go to Resources, and then Webinars. I'm not too keen on that word, webinars. I don't know. It's in the lexicon now. We're stuck with it, but I don't know. I never liked it from the beginning. Maybe I didn't go public, but I'm expressing now. Webinars. I don't know. It's just I think we could come up with something better than webinars. Ugh. I understand where it comes from, web and seminar, but I don't like it. And I was early. I just wasn't public early. We Be Spelling. Spelling Bees for fundraising. They have a new video up. It's from a night that raised money for HFC, which is Help for Children. The organization needed help for its programs for children. They turned to We Be Spelling. They raised $110,000 in a Spelling Bee night. Check out the video. It's at webeespelling.com. I've got video interviews for you from the 2016 Nonprofit Technology Conference. 2016. God, I need an intern so I have someone to blame. The 2016 Nonprofit Technology. That video is titled Virtual Organizations and Volunteers. There are four interviews in those areas, and they are on managing remote employees, managing remote volunteers, where to find volunteers, and leveraging your expert or tech volunteers. My video from the 2016 Nonprofit Technology Conference with the links to the four interviews is at TonyMartinetti.com. And I suggest you check out this year's Nonprofit Technology Conference, 2017 NTC. This is always a very smart conference. I say it often because I believe it. Check out NTC. It's in Washington, D.C. this year, March 23rd. You can get the info at n10.org. And that is Tony's Take Two. The rest of the live listener love, you know it's got to go out. I mean, there's no question about that. Besides the ones I already mentioned, we've got Tampa, Florida. We've got Farmington, Missouri. Welcome, Farmington, Missouri. You haven't been with us before. Welcome. And Somerville, New Jersey. Welcome. Live listener love to you. Let's go abroad. Of course, Seoul, South Korea, always checking in. So loyal. South Korea. Annyeonghaseyo. Kamsahamnida. We've got Kiev in Ukraine. I don't know the... I'm just going to have to do it. Live listener love to Kiev. Tokyo, also very loyal. Multiple. We've got multiple Tokyo. Konnichiwa. And the podcast pleasantries to the over 12,000 listening in the time shift. So glad that you are with us, whether it's a week later, a couple days, month later. Glad to have you with us. Pleasantries to our over 12,000 podcast listeners. And the affiliate affections, fast on the heels of the live listener love and the podcast pleasantries to our AM and FM listeners throughout the country. AM and FM stations, let your station know that you're listening. Little feedback, affections to the AM and FM affiliate listeners. Okay. Rob Mitchell, you seem to be chomping at the bit to talk about donor-advised funds. Let's bring you in first about donor-advised funds.
I am a big proponent of donor-advised funds.
What about them?
And I can tell you that they've been one of the biggest contributors from the grants that they're making out of donor-advised funds since the depth of the recession.
Now, is this tracked in your algorithms? Is this part of the individual giving? Is that where we see donor-advised funds?
We see it in unallocated.
Unallocated. Okay. Uh-huh. Okay.
Donor-advised funds are they're not new. They came in with the Tax Act of 68.
Yeah.
They're not new, but this company called Fidelity, an investment company, saw an opportunity. And the thing that I love about donor-advised funds, and Paul talked about this a bit, the rise of the million-dollar gift. I think donor-advised funds have a big part of that because as a contributor myself, if my daughter's here in the studio listening with us, if our family adopted a charitable project for which we wanted to contribute, but we did not have enough money available to us to just scratch a check, we could create a donor-advised fund, continue to add to it, let it be invested so that it would grow so that we could meet our charitable mission for our family in a future year.
Of course, this is a subject of controversy because
yes,
there are people who are on the other side of this, and they've written editorials in the Chronicle, as you have, who believe that there's too much money parked in donor-advised funds. It's not getting out to the charities. It sits. The donor gets their charitable deduction immediately, but it could sit for decades or generations, theoretically, in the donor-advised fund and never get to the charities that it's supposed to be benefiting?
Well, theoretically, that could be the case. But if you read the fine print, if you set up a donor-advised fund with one of the big three, Fidelity, Vanguard, or Schwab, or with the Silicon Valley Foundation, or any number of different true charitable organizations, community funds are big proponents of donor-advised funds. They can't carry on perpetually. And the other thing is just a mathematical equation. Foundations are required to give 5% of their assets each year. And so what do they give? A little more than 5% of their assets each year.
Well, this is the argument against requiring donor-advised funds to distribute a percentage each year.
Right? Donor-advised funds are giving over 20% of their assets as grants to end-use charities each year.
But there are people who would say, well, let's make it 50 or 40 or 40 or 50, and we'll see an increase. All right, we're going to leave this because I want to talk about some of the I want to talk more about what you're involved in more concretely. Let's bring Doug back. Doug's there's a lot going on in the world, not the least of which is the presidential inauguration today. We've got Brexit, Great Britain leaving the European Union. We've got Syrian refugee crisis in Europe. How do any of these or other things that are on your mind affect our 2017 philanthropy?
Well, about an hour ago, the new president referenced a lot of America as being in a state of some carnage. That's his word. And whether you look at it that way or not, I do believe that philanthropy is going to have to shoulder a lot more than it has in the past. But we all know that philanthropy can't do all of the work. And so I think one of the questions as this administration grows into its maturity will be what kind of services will be cut back where philanthropy will have to fill in even more of the gap. So I think one of the messages and one of the reasons I think that 2017 will be a great year.
Where's my damn intern?
Will be a great year for philanthropy anyway, is that the messages will be very concrete and very strong about the needs that society faces that a lot of government support, as we see it right now, it may not happen this way, but a lot of government support won't be there for. So I think the philanthropic sector will have to really step up to the plate in this coming year.
Yeah. How about you, Paul? What about world affairs in 2017?
I am much more optimistic. You can look up the Wall of Fear, listeners, and that'll lead you to not sleep very well at night about your money. The issue with philanthropy making up for government spending has been, Doug, with all due respect, talked about when any Republican has been elected. And you have to understand that the federal budget is $3.8 trillion a year. Philanthropy is $500 billion. And most of that doesn't go to social services, and most of it is never going to go to social services. So it's not going to make up very much. We can hope it will, but that is nothing that can touch Medicaid, Medicare, food stamp budgets. That is the non-discretionary part of the federal budget is $2.8 trillion. And the discretionary part is a trillion.
All right.
So I don't have that problem in the forefront of my mind. That's making up. It just can't.
Okay. Well, let's turn to Doug.
I just want to be clear. I probably made an incorrect impression a moment ago. I didn't mean to imply that charity would make up for what government does or does not do. And you're right. That question has been around forever. And the answer has been around forever. Charity can't step in like that. What I meant to say, and I apologize for saying it badly, was that this gives the organizations an opportunity to make their case stronger. Not because they will say, we will make up the difference, but because the need is there and your philanthropic support is even stronger than it's ever been, which is, I think, a slightly different way of saying what I meant to say before. Because, Paul, you're so right. This is a question that's been around forever. And I don't believe it's just for Republican presidents. I think no matter what we do, there will be gaps, by the way, that the government does not fill. And that's going to be a matter of policy. But that's always going to be the case. And that those gaps will not be filled by philanthropy. But philanthropy, the organizations themselves, if we kind of shift the mirror over there, can then say, hey, we have a big job to do, support us. So I hope that bridges those two comments.
Okay, so you're seeing it more as opportunity
for
around messaging and marketing, basically,
right,
for the charities.
But Paul's absolutely correct. I don't think anybody would disagree that what charity does to help society is nothing by comparison to the amount of the government can spend to do the same kinds of things.
Okay. Paul, anything else you want to add on that?
No, I think Doug's explanation is just perfect.
Okay.
And I appreciate that.
Two professors in agreement.
Wow.
give them a chance.
Well, I've always, my heart is with Paul. He's been one of my heroes for the last two decades.
All right, Doug, how about you with international affairs and impacting, I'm looking at Rob and I'm saying Doug. Rob, international affairs, 2017 and beyond. What do you see?
Well, first let's talk about 2016. The first half of 2016 was dramatically different in giving.
I typically do not allow anarchy on the show. When I ask you about 2017, I expect to answer
I'm getting there.
But you came from Texas. I'll give you the deference. Go ahead, anarchist.
There was a lot of uncertainty. I mean, we had the weirdest presidential election in my lifetime. We had distraction from the Olympic Games. We had an increase in terror events worldwide. And giving was essentially flat for the first half of the year. And then it took a spike in July, flattened out again. And then the last quarter of the year, after the election, what our algorithms show was that giving spiked during the last 3 months of the year.
So the growth in 2016 was not linear.
It was not linear.
What was the first 6 months like?
It was 0.9% growth.
So just basically 1%. But we ended up with 4.4.
So 4.1.
4.1, I'm sorry. 4.4 is for next year. 4.1. So that extra 3.1, 3.2 came all in the second half. There was a big spike in July first in the summer?
Yes.
And then again in November right after the election?
Exactly.
Okay.
And the spike in November continued linearly. Am I saying that correct?
No, but it's a word, linearly.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you for correcting me on that.
My pleasure.
There are two professors with us. Yeah. I've got to be correct.
Well, I have their mics shut off. It's me. It's me now. It's me.
That was a linear progression for November, October, November, and December. And
But there was a spike in November right after the election, November 8th.
Absolutely.
It was. Okay. I get we just attribute that to stability. Election is over.
I think that there was some election relief involved emotionally. I think that people weren't sitting on the sidelines. Gifts were still being made. They just weren't growing their giving at the rate they'd been growing in past years. And we're talking mostly about individuals. But corporate giving grew at a good rate this last year. Now for 2017, I think there are a lot of unanswered questions, and we've got the expert on the phone with us, Professor Shervish. One of the things that the new president has talked about in his tax plan is an elimination of the estate tax. And Paul spent a great deal of his professional career talking about generational transfer of wealth, and we've all talked about what would happen if the estate tax went away. What would the impact on charitable bequest giving be? And so that's one of those unanswered questions. We don't know what the tax plan is going to be. And it's going to be a very, very interesting year. And I have more questions than I have answers, frankly.
All right, let's go out for a break. When we come back, we'll ask Paul about the estate tax repeal possibility. And I also want to get at this corporate 5% giving proportion. And I got another live listener, love, one specific one. Stay with us.
Like what you're hearing on Nonprofit Radio? Tony's got more. On YouTube, you'll find clips from his stand-up comedy, TV spots, and exclusive interviews. Catch guests like Seth Godin, Craig Newmark, the founder of Craigslist, Mark Echo of Echo Enterprises, Charles Best from DonorsChoose.org, Aria Finger of DoSomething.org, and Naomi Levine from New York University's Hyman Center on Philanthropy. Tony tweets, too. He finds the best content from the most knowledgeable and interesting people in and around nonprofits to share on his stream. If you have valuable info, he wants to retweet you. During the show, you can join the conversation on Twitter using hashtag NonprofitRadio. Twitter is an easy way to reach Tony. He's at Tony Martinetti, MARTIGNETTI. Remember, there's a G before the N. He hosts a podcast for the Chronicle of Philanthropy. Fundraising Fundamentals is a short, monthly show devoted to getting you over your fundraising hurdles. Just like Nonprofit Radio, Tony talks to leading thinkers, experts, and cool people with great ideas. As one fan said, Tony picks their brains and I don't have to leave my office. Fundraising Fundamentals was recently dubbed the most helpful nonprofit podcast you have ever heard. You can also join the conversation on Facebook, where you can ask questions before or after the show. The guests are there too. Get insider show alerts by email. Tony tells you who's on each week and always includes links so that you can contact guests directly. To sign up, visit the Facebook page or TonyMartinetti.com.
I'm Peter Shankman, author of Zombie Loyalists, and you're listening to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%.
Special live listener love is right here in the studio because that's Alexi Mitchell visiting from, she's extremely well-traveled 24-year-old, India, Thailand, Germany, Switzerland. What am I leaving out? It's amazing. Very well-traveled.
France.
Student at Columbia University, her proud father saying France. Lexi, thanks for being with us. Live listener love to you. Okay, let's bring Paul in. Paul, you want to opine about the possibility of the estate tax repeal and what that would mean?
Well, I have done some research on that.
Yeah, I've heard rumors to that effect. Yeah, some. Right.
But about the repeal. Has the Center on Philanthropy. And what we've done is we've asked people in research what would be, if there is an estate tax currently, what would be your distribution of your estate? And it turns out that it's pretty much what it would be correctly. According to what is happening, the distribution to heirs, to charity, and to taxes. But if we say, what happens if you eliminate the estate tax, what will happen? People that don't like the elimination of the estate tax, the issue for them is largely that less money is going to government. The evidence is that from these studies, now these are people giving their opinion, is that more will go to philanthropy and more will go to heirs. The loser is government by definition. Now, people that think that government is philanthropy are going to object to the repeal of the estate tax. But even the government has shown in one or two studies earlier on that the repeal of the estate tax has not led to a decline in charitable giving. And I predict because of how wealthy people are and needing to figure out for their own sake what to do good with that money, there's not going to be a problem with the repeal of the estate tax.
Okay. You're pretty well recognized as an authority.
I love that news.
Okay. You got Rob Mitchell's vote, and Doug is nodding.
Not nodding off.
No, nodding. Nodding off is different. No, I didn't say nodding off.
I just wanted to clarify.
I'm not even going to touch that. I don't know. It can't happen. It just doesn't happen. Nonprofit radio.
And it's my intuition that, although I haven't studied it as much as Paul, he's absolutely correct. It's a non-answerable question, but go for it. I mean, there could be other reasons to not eliminate the estate tax. And by the way, the estate tax is pretty much eliminated for most people by far because of the extremely high...
Yeah, it's $5 million, right?
Yes, it's $10 million per couple. So, I mean, what are we talking about here? I don't think there's been any decrease among people who have estates of less than that in their bequest charitable giving.
Mm-hmm. I give you an anecdotal demonstration of what Paul's just said, or Doug's just said. That is that... I unfortunately lost my mother in November. We're now dealing with her estate, which is a non-taxable sized estate. Her charitable contributions to me were awe-striking, actually.
Yeah.
They and she got no tax benefit whatsoever for creating those charitable bequests.
We that's widely recognized. People aren't doing it for the tax benefit for the most part. But study after study, Bank of America has studies of high net worth giving, and the tax benefit is like usually the third or fourth reason that people cite for leaving charity in their estate. I want to turn to the corporate. This is just a little bugaboo of mine. Maybe, and you're welcome to tell me if I'm mistaken. Corporate giving is 5% of annual giving, according to the Atlas of Giving. That seems small to me. Doug, am I off base with corporations only contributing 5%? And tell me if I am.
I don't think you're so much off base. Again, we have a zero-sum game here. It's 100%. So what do they represent within that? They've been around 5% for, you know, for a while. But I think really your question leads me to think about what their motive in charitable giving is and their place in society. I think corporations are becoming much more aware of the role they need to play in society. But at the same time, they have one primary purpose, and that is to make money for their stockholders. We don't do that in the charitable world, but the corporations do that. And so there could be a huge uproar if corporations got more charitable.
All right.
I mean to distinguish that from the newly growing B corporation segment.
Let's get at it this way. Rob, what proportions of the different sources of fundraising are growing across bequest, individual, foundation, corporate, missing other sources? I mean, so we've got this now 3% GDP.
Well, you have to.
Somebody's giving more. What proportion? Which sources are giving more?
You have to consider where the proportions are. So, as Doug and Paul have both pointed out, when you add individual giving to bequest giving, which is actually individuals, that's a gigantic number.
Okay.
And so that's where most of the growth comes from, no matter what the growth rate is. And so, if corporations, as they did this past year, their gifts grew at 10%, which that's the first time I've seen that since we've started the Atlas of Giving.
And it's way above the annual growth of 4.1.
Exactly.
All right, so it's more than double. Okay, I accept that.
And but Paul's exactly right. In the case of publicly traded companies, their first priority is to their shareholders. And if you don't think that a shareholder at a shareholders meeting is going to stand up and challenge a charitable gift because it could have been something that enriched their shares, you'd be wrong.
Yeah.
Now, 95% of the businesses in America are not publicly traded. They're small businesses. I have a couple of them. I give to charity through my small business, but it's much more difficult to measure those kinds of gifts than it is the large publicly traded corporations.
We just have about a minute and a half left or so, and I want to just touch on some state data, because you track sector, source, and state. Where's the most generous state in the country?
You know, this year what we showed was this is going
to stay close to your mic.
This is going to come as a surprise. North Dakota.
We love North Dakota.
North Dakota grew 7.1%. And the states that you typically look for are Texas, Florida, California, and New York. North Dakota grew faster.
Those are also the most populous states. Those are the three most populated.
Of course.
California's number one, Texas two, New York is number three.
So the North Dakota phenomena is also a function of their population and the oil play that has happened. And what we're finding from the oil play, whether it's in Texas or in North Dakota, is that there's a delayed effect in charitable giving.
And in North Dakota, you're saying the population is a factor because it's so small.
It's so small.
I don't know what the population is there, but it's small. Well, we love North Dakota. All right. Gentlemen, we got to leave it there. I want to thank you very much. CEO Rob Mitchell from Atlas of Giving, atlasofgiving.com. Former professor at Columbia University, Doug White. We'll have him back when his next book is ready. It's on the Wounded Warrior Project. And Paul Shervish, professor emeritus at Boston College. Gentlemen, thank you so very much.
Thank you, Tony.
Thank you.
Pleasure. Next week, Amy Sample Ward, our social media contributor, returns. If you missed any part of today's show, I beseech you, find it on TonyMartinetti.com. We're sponsored by Pursuant, online tools for small and mid-sized nonprofits, data-driven and technology-enabled. And by We Be Spelling, super cool spelling bee fundraisers. WeBeeSpelling.com. Our creative producer is Claire Meyerhoff. Sam Liebowitz is the line producer. Gavin Dahl is our AM and FM outreach director. The show's social media is by Susan Chavez. And this cool music is by Scott Stein. Be with me next week for Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Go out and be great.
What's not to love about Nonprofit Radio? Tony gets the best guests. Check this out from Seth Godin.
This is the first revolution since TV 1950 and Henry Ford 1920. It's the revolution of our lifetime.
Here's a smart, simple idea from Craigslist founder Craig Newmark.
Yeah, in sites or in presentation or anything, people don't really need the fancy stuff. They need something which is simple and fast.
When's the best time to post on Facebook? Facebook's Andrew Noyes knows.
At traffic is at an all-time high around 9 a.m. or 8 p.m. So that's when you should be posting your most meaningful posts.
Here's Aria Finger, COO of DoSomething.org.
Young people are not going to be involved in social change if it's boring and they don't see the impact of what they're doing. So you got to make it fun and applicable to these young people, because otherwise a 15 and 16-year-old, they have better things to do. They have Xbox, they have TV, they have their cell phones.
Ami Dar is the founder of Idealist.
It took 2 or 3 years for foundation staff to sort of deign to add an email address to their card. Yes. It was like, it was phone. This email thing is right. Weird. Plus, why should I give it away?
Charles Best founded DonorsChoose.org.
Somehow they've gotten in touch, kind of offline, as it were.
Yeah.
And they'll do exchanges of brownies and visits and physical gifts.
Mark Echo is the founder and CEO of Echo Enterprises. You may be wearing his hoodies and shirts. Tony talked to him.
Yeah, you know, I'm a big believer that it's not what you make in life. It's you know, it's how you make people feel.
This is public radio host Majora Carter.
Innovation is in the power of understanding that you don't just, you know, you just put money on a situation and expect it to heal. You put money on a situation and invest it and expect it to grow.
And savvy advice for success from Eric Saperston.
What separates those who achieve from those who do not is in direct proportion to one's ability to ask others for help.
The smartest experts and leading thinkers are on Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%.